In the last lecture, we discussed the fact that there is a way to measure evolution in real time, and it's pretty exciting, and it was a result of the modern synthesis, the fact that we integrated Darwinian natural selection with Mendelian genetics, and we realized that, by definition, if there is a change in allele frequency, then we can say evolution has occurred. So, taking that to the next level, we now have to ask ourselves, well, what allows a Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium to exist? And it turns out that there are five conditions. And if these Hardy-Weinberg, if these five conditions are met, then we say we have a Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium and no evolution is going to occur. And so what's kind of cool about this is I'm going to tell you about those five conditions, and then what we're going to look at is we're going to look at what would be a violation of each of those five conditions. And if there's a violation of even one of those five conditions, then we know that that will cause a change in allele frequency, and therefore we can say evolution has occurred. So let's first of all just summarize the five conditions, and then we'll look at the five conditions in a little more detail. Number one, the first condition is the population must be very, very large. It's condition number one. Hardy-Weinberg condition number two is that the population must be isolated from other populations. And what we mean by that is that there's no movement of individuals out of the population or movement of other individuals into the population. No immigration or emigration. Hardy-Weinberg condition three is that there must be no mutations within the population. Hardy-Weinberg condition four is that any mating that occurs between individuals in the population must be random. And finally, condition number five is that there must be no natural selection occurring in the population, which means that every individual within the population has an equal chance of survival in the particular environmental conditions in which the population exists. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to take a closer look at those five conditions, and we're going to see what happens when they are not met, because we know when those conditions aren't met, there will be a change in allele frequency and evolution will occur. So, condition number one is a large population. As long as the population is really, really, really large, then there's going to be no problem. The allele frequency should stay the same each generation, okay? So that means, well, what would be a violation of condition one? Well, if you have a small population. So anytime you somehow generate a small population, you will get a change in allele frequencies. Now, let's sort of take a closer look at that. We've given a name to this phenomenon. It's called genetic drift. And you can kind of get the idea, right? There's a drift, you know, it should be maybe allele, and maybe they should call it allelic drift because it's really a change in allele frequencies because of the small population. But in the biology books, we call it genetic drift. And so that's what we'll call it here. And it's simply a change in allele frequency due to chance. And what happens is when you get a smaller population, just by chance, you're going to get a change in allele frequencies. And kind of a way to think about this is to compare it to something that we all know, and that would be coin tosses. We know that basically if you toss a coin, you should get 50% tails and 50% heads. We all know that. But we know that if you, and that would be true if you do a lot of tosses, right? Let's say you do 1,000 tosses. The likelihood of getting a 50-50 ratio, you know, it's pretty good. You're going to get pretty close to 50-50. In fact, if you did 10,000, you'd be, you know, you feel even more confident that you get a 50-50 ratio. But if you just, let's say, toss it a coin 10 times, there's a very high probability that you're not going to get a 50-50. Now, you could, but there's a very good chance you won't. You could get maybe 7 heads and 3 tails or something like that. So this is the idea of genetic drift, is that the smaller the population, the more likelihood you're going to not have the allele frequency that you would expect. Now, I'm going to go through and give 2 specific examples of how this would happen in nature. And then, you know, they'll help illustrate what I'm trying to say. The first great example of genetic drift is called the founder effect. Okay? Now, this happens when a group of organisms goes from a larger population, and part of that larger population goes off and founds a new population of organisms. And what they do, they colonize an area. So the example here, and I'm going to use a human example, when in the early part of our the life of our country, there was a lot of movement from Europe to America. And so religious groups like the Amish would move from Europe to North America. And when they would go from a larger population to a smaller population. Because essentially what would happen is it would be a small group of those people would be, and this is why you get the founder effect, they would literally leave Europe and they would found a new group, Amish, in, let's say, Pennsylvania. That's where a lot of them live. And what was happening there is you have a larger population in Europe, it's a small group of those individuals go off and found this new population. What happens is that new population doesn't have the same allele frequency as that larger population. It's very unlikely that they would. And if you look at my illustration on the PowerPoint slide, you'll see a really good example of that. It's real simple. You see a circle with, it looks like about 50% red and 50% blue. And those, let's say, represent 2 alleles. And if you just, you know, grab a smaller part of that larger group, and you move off and found a new population, you'll see there's an example there where it's all 100% red. And then there's another circle with 100% blue. And then there's a circle with, looks like a little more than 50% blue. And maybe, you know, let's say, we'll just, you know, a little more than 50% blue. So what you're seeing there is that those individuals that move off will not reflect the same allele frequency that's in the original large population. And that's essentially what happens in the founder effect. And what's interesting is you can see this pretty dramatically in the Amish, because there was this allele that causes an extra finger to appear. It's called polydactyly. And you can see a nice x-ray of an example of a person with polydactyly in my PowerPoint slide. And the percentage of people in the New World, in Pennsylvania, in the Amish, with polydactyly was much greater than what they saw in Europe. So you can see that there was a change in allele frequency. So that's a great example of this violation of condition one, which is maintaining a large population. Another example of this violation, and it's on the next slide, is what's called the bottleneck effect. And what I've got here is you can see a nice graph of what happens in the bottleneck effect. And essentially what's going on is you have a very large population of organisms, and they, for some reason, there's an environmental catastrophe that basically almost eliminates the population, but not quite to extinction. So you go to a very, very small population, and then, thankfully, you recover from that. And you can see the graph that shows that. 2 examples of this. Many of you may have been out to Onyenuevo, just north of Santa Cruz, and you've seen the northern elephant seal. Well, we're very fortunate to be able to see those seals because back in the late 1800s, they were hunted almost to extinction. Some people say there were maybe a dozen individuals left. You know, and the populations used to be, you know, tens of thousands, and they were hunted almost to extinction. And thankfully, this handful of elephant seals made it through, and finally people, you know, realized, hey, we should stop killing these organisms. And they have bounced back over the last 100 years, and that's why we can see them in Año Nuevo. But what's interesting is there's not very much genetic diversity in that population because they went through this bottleneck. And so, once again, an example of genetic drift where you went from a large population to a small population, and therefore the population currently does not reflect the allele frequency that existed before the bottleneck. And so evolution has occurred in that population. Another example are cheetahs in Africa. Cheetahs are one of the cats found in Africa. And what's interesting about those cheetahs is that biologists know, because they've looked at their genome, that there is very little genetic diversity in the cheetah population. And so we know that the cheetahs in Africa went through a bottleneck at some point in the past. They actually don't know, we don't know why or how, but we know that they did. And so there's, so they also went through this bottleneck. So just like the northern elephant seal, at some point they had a much larger population, and the genetic, we know that they had a much greater genetic diversity at that point. So they have essentially gone through evolution as well, because the allele frequency now is very different than it was in the past due to this bottleneck effect. Okay, let's go to condition two. Condition two says the population must be isolated from other populations. In other words, there's no emigration or immigration either into or out of the population. So what is a violation of this? Well, it's kind of what I just said. Anytime there is movement of organisms out of a population or into a population, we call this gene flow. In other words, there's a movement of individuals out, there's gene flow out. If there's movement of individuals into the population, there's gene flow into the population. And this can change the allele frequency of the population. So one thing I want to point out to you is that it can be very confusing for biology students, this term gene flow and genetic drift. They often get them confused. And so I want you to be very clear that genetic drift is a violation of condition one. Genetic drift is essentially what happens when you go from a large population to a small population. Gene flow is a violation of condition two, and that's simply when individuals either leave the population or they come into the population. And so if you actually think about the words, they actually do make sense, but they can be confusing if you don't think about it clearly. Okay, let's go to condition three. Condition three is no mutations. So obviously the violation of that is if there are mutations within a population. And the reason why this is a violation is, well, now you're actually introducing new alleles into the population, so the allele frequency is changing, and therefore evolution is occurring. Remember, anytime there's a violation of any one of these five Hardy-Weinberg conditions, evolution, by definition, is occurring. Okay, let's go to condition four. Condition four is random mating. And random mating is simply what it says. The fact that any individual in the population will mate with any other individual, and it's completely random. There's, you know, no predictability about who's going to mate with whom. And so therefore, a violation of condition four is what we call non-random mating. You can have non-random mating. You can have, the fun example of this is in human populations, and it's what I call a sort of mating. And it really is what happens in human populations. We individuals will actually choose partners to mate with, you know, to get married to and have children with. And you notice, for instance, I use, you know, the example here of, you see the image of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. Beautiful people generally select other beautiful people to mate with. And that's what you see in Hollywood, right? You see these beautiful movie stars. They find other movie stars that are beautiful, and they end up getting married and having kids together and so forth. And so that's called a sort of mating, and that is a violation of the random mating. And so evolution is going to be occurring in that population. Okay. Condition five, no natural selection. In other words, every individual has an equal chance of survival within, you know, the particular environmental conditions that they're experiencing at the time. So therefore, a violation of that is when natural selection occurs. And remember, let's just remember what natural selection is that certain alleles will provide traits that allow organisms to have some kind of advantage, either, and they have to, the advantage has to actually allow them to do two things, has to allow them to survive and to reproduce better than other alleles. And so that would allow for natural selection to occur. And so if natural selection occurs, we say that evolution obviously is occurring. And once again, that's a violation of condition five in the Hardy-Weinberg. So let's do a quick summary. Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium. To achieve the equilibrium, five conditions must be met. Population must be large. Population must be isolated from other populations. There's no gene flow. There must be no mutations. The mating must be completely random between individuals. And there must be no natural selection occurring. In other words, all individuals, all alleles have equal chance of survival under the particular environmental conditions. And remember that if Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium is achieved, no natural selection, or excuse me, no evolution occurs. And if even any one of these five conditions are not met, if they're violated, then we say by definition evolution has occurred, because that will result in a change in allele frequency in the population. And by definition, due to the modern synthesis, a change in allele frequencies does result in evolution. So that concludes this lecture on Hardy-Weinberg.